everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on Saturday the 9th of March out in Reykjavik, Iceland, as always. And I have a big show for you this week. I've had a fair bit of time to play, which I will get into the reasons behind that, but it did mean that I had time to finish off Final Fantasy VII Remake. I was paused in Chapter 17, and the release of the sequel, Rebirth, has made me go back to it, so I'll talk about that. I've also tried out a few new releases, Akka R, Pacific Drive, and Expeditions, a Mudrunner game. After that, I've pulled 10 cool indie releases that are coming out in March out of the calendar, and we'll run through those, and then I will round off the episode with a little review of the viral hit card game, Balatro, which seems to have taken over the gamer internet, and it's taken over my brain as well. So I will round out with a review of that. But the reason I've had so much time for playing is that, unfortunately for me, the news story became my life last week when I was laid off from my job in the video games industry. And obviously there's a lot of processing that goes on with that. I decided to take some downtime, just relax, play games that I'd been meaning to get to, just treat myself a little bit. I also got into making stuff for YouTube, just to keep my brain busy, really. I always enjoy making YouTube videos, but I've not had that much time for it. So I made a video a day. They're all quite short. They're like 5 to 10 minutes long. They are about things like my opinions on the Horizon games and their place in the zeitgeist. There was one about 5 cult classic indie games that I feel like don't quite get the love that they deserve. And there was a short video about some awesome games that got ports that came out very quietly that I thought people might like to know about. So if you'd like to see what I have been up to, there's a whole load of extra stuff on the YouTube channel. That's at youtube.com/gamingindthewild. I might well keep it up as I get to job seeking and like looking towards the future. I have got more ideas for videos. I've been thinking about doing a video essay about eco games and how I consider games to have a resource collection problem. I've got a video idea about mini open worlds, like pocket-sized open worlds that don't take up all your time but offer that same feeling of exploration. So if you like the sound of all that stuff, then go and follow the YouTube channel. I'd be happy to have you along. And obviously, absolute solidarity for the, I think it's up to 19,000 or so people that have been laid off in the last few months in the video game industry, and a lot more in total over the last year. It really sucks. It's a horrible feeling. The industry is going through a lot of turmoil. And it really does hit you on a personal level. Even if you're optimistic about the future, you know there's stuff out there for you. It doesn't feel great, man. So solidarity to everyone who's been going through that. And let's hope that the industry rights itself in good time. And that all the affected people just find a good path forward. But to move on and get onto the games, one of the things that I did this week, a big checklist item for me, was to finish Final Fantasy VII Remake. I started it last year. I got really far in it. And I had a mixed time. There were absolutely glorious moments that just put the biggest smile on my face. Obviously, the Wall Market dance sequence. Things that we remember from the original game. Anytime there were bits of nostalgia, like hearing a piece of music that I haven't heard for literally 20 years. And suddenly the memories come flooding back of that first playthrough. That was all very effective. I am a first wave Final Fantasy VII fan, and I played it on the 4-disc version on PlayStation 1. So the nostalgia is huge. And it's just amazing to see this version of Midgar, to see those little blobby characters reinvented and reimagined, and the glow-up is real for people like Cloud and Red, Yuffie, and Aerith. And given how lo-fi the source material was for a lot of these characters, it's amazing that they have blown them up like this and imbued them with so much character. But I would also say that there's a lot of downsides to this game. If you strip away the nostalgia and the FF7 of it all and look at what the game actually is, it is very much a Squaresoft JRPG with all of the stuff that you get with that. Invisible walls everywhere, odd movement, over-animated, like getting on and off ladders, lots of small frustrations, and side quests that are probably best not mentioned at all because they are so bad, honestly. And by reworking the game, they've polished up its high points, but they've also padded out a lot of the story at moments that were smaller in the original. So they've changed up the pacing, and that did result in a lot of, well, padding. There are points where you're running around the Sector 7 slums doing the most menial fetch quests imaginable, but some of them are actually really good. For example, the character Jesse was a bit part player in the original, but now has a whole section where you go to the higher plate of Midgar City and carry out a night mission, which was just joyful, really. So I have very mixed feelings about this game. If the nostalgia was stripped out, I'm not sure that I'd have pushed through it. But I did, and, you know, it is FF7. They've done some interesting stuff with the story. I'm playing through Integrade now, and Yuffie is delightful. I love what they've done with that character. And I have Rebirth downloaded. Thank you very much to Square for supplying a code for that. It's the first time I've gotten a Square code. So I'm going to polish off Integrade this week, and I am looking forward to seeing where this Final Fantasy reimagining goes. I did also have another swing at Pacific Drive. I've talked about this one already, but I think I'm going to knock my playthrough of this one on the head. I never quite found my way into it. Pacific Drive is the paranormal roguelike, where you get a station wagon, which you upgrade in your garage, and then you have to do runs through an X-Files-y abandoned zone, with the ultimate goal of escaping. I was really looking forward to this one. It looks compelling and the idea is great, but I've really tried with it. I've played through the opening twice, first in the demo and second in the full version, and I really wasn't able to grapple with it and get my head around it. It turns out that it's a very resource-heavy game. It has a survival aspect that I wasn't expecting, where you're grinding for materials, combining things with other things to make objects that you then combine with other objects to make more things, like some kind of resource-grinding pyramid scheme. I would also say that you spend a lot of the time of this game in menus, and the menu system is layers deep and hard to navigate with so many tabs. The codex is a wall of text and notifications, and to be honest, when I actually did get out on the road, the driving didn't really speak to me. It was very fiddly with the handbrake and the ignition and opening and closing doors by holding buttons. It all felt stiff and stodgy and counterintuitive, and ultimately, it all felt a little bit too much like work. So sadly, this game isn't for me, but I will say that I had a lot of fun watching pod patron Dave Jackson, the host of the Tales from the Backlog show, struggling through a couple of runs over on Twitch. Follow Dave on Twitch and check out Tales from the Backlog. If you would like to see a really fun playthrough of Pacific Drive, check it out. I'll be riding shotgun and I'll be rubbernecking at Dave's playthrough instead, letting him struggle through it instead of struggling through it myself. That's Pacific Drive. I also had a brief stint playing a game called Akka R, which is an old school shoot 'em up based on an unfinished Atari prototype. And when I think of retro shoot 'em ups, my brain goes to things like Super Aleste, Space Harrier, Xenon 2. But Akka R goes back even further than those pixel-based games. It's an extremely retro shooter in the Tempest style, and Jeff Minter was involved with taking this unfinished prototype and getting it over the line. The gameplay in this one involves looking downwards and bombing and chaining explosions together. So if you drop a bomb that explodes an enemy, that enemy will then explode. The explosion goes outwards slowly, and it will take out other enemies that then explode. So you have to just chain and chain and chain and pump up your multiplier, which gets reset when you have to start a new chain. There are other weapons, too, that you can get. There is a gun and a bomb, so you have to balance your weapons. They sort of power each other up and run each other down. But this one is very, very busy on the screen. It has vector-style graphics with that old-fashioned prism palette where all of the lines are kind of flashing. It has a strange sort of 90s digital nerd rave vibe. I don't quite know how to describe it. And it messed with my eyes quite a lot, actually. So I bailed on this one quite quickly. There was a lot of intense flashing, including tutorial text with flashing different colors pulsing behind the letters. So I was squinting, trying to read the tutorial text whilst being very distracted by the colorfulness of it all. I would say that it's probably a fascinating curio for anyone who is very interested in Atari or anyone who is very interested in Jeff Minter's output, like Llamatron and Tempest and all of the games that he has worked on. But perhaps it is one for the superfans. That's Akka R. And the final game that I tried out this week is Expeditions, a Mudrunner game. I quite like these Mudrunner games and SnowRunner and stuff. There is something oddly zen about them. They are third-person driving games, but they're not racing, it's not about moving quickly. It's about getting giant, heavy, unwieldy vehicles that handle like crap through very, very rough, challenging terrain, including ground deformation, the weight of the car affecting mud, inflating your tires, selecting four-wheel drive, gas conservation, using a winch to pull yourself over obstacles. It's very mechanical, it's very slow, and very calming, actually. This one is more of an open world version. You get a camp that you can upgrade, you get different areas to explore. It has missions that you can do, or a free roam option to just drive around and do your own thing. And it does what you expect. You know, you identify the right route, you work with all the gear. There's a lot of detail in the physics and the environment, and a simple boulder can prove to be like a formidable opponent if it is blocking a path in a certain way. I like the way that the weight of the car interacts pleasingly with the mud. River navigation is kind of gripping drama. If you go too fast, you might wheel spin and get stuck. If you go too slow, you might sink. So there's a realism in having to hold your nerve and operate very calmly and think about what you're doing. It's very slow going, high quality, like Borecore dad gaming, like a driving version of Power Wash Simulator. On the downside, there is a bit of jank to it. I found that I got my car stuck on trees often, in a game-breaking kind of way, although you can warp back to base at any time. But even so, trees seem to interfere with the car. If it's an articulated vehicle, they'll get stuck in like the area between the cab and the back and just freeze the car, and there's no way to get out. So there is a bit of jank in there. But overall, I really enjoyed Expeditions, a Mudrunner game. So that's it for the roundup. I will say that the next two sections here, I recorded earlier in the week for videos. So if you have been watching the YouTube channel, you might have heard this audio already. It's going to be the March Indie Game Roundup and then a Balatro review. So enjoy those. And before I sign out here, I'm just going to say there is a Patreon for this podcast. So if you are a long-term listener or someone who is just finding the show for the first time now, you're welcome to support this show. Join the community at patreon.com/gamingintheWild. You can sign up for $1 a month or more if you like. You will get a Discord invite to our lovely warm Discord community. The community is always doing cool stuff, man. There have been a single-sitting games club where we all play a short game and then talk about it together. This month's game is Slay the Princess, which I'm looking forward to playing. There is also a new one that is a book and game club. So games based on books. You read the book, you play the game, and then discuss it. Dovetail is organizing that one. The first game is The Invincible there. There are also channels for Rebirth and Ultros and other games that we are playing. So you're welcome to come and join the fun. It's patreon.com/gamingintheWild if you'd like to support the show and join the community. And a big thank you to my newest patrons, Kira, Lisa, Nikolai at Night, and Shy Guy. Thanks very much to all of you for signing up. Next up, it's the March Indie Game Preview. And let's start with a couple of games that have come out already. On the first of the month, The Mobius Machine came out by Madruga Works. It's out on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation, and it's a sci-fi Metroidvania. The developer says, explore an open, interconnected world filled with brutal alien lifeforms and malfunctioning machines. Find your way through abandoned facilities and perilous environments on the surface and in the depths of this world. This one's had medium reviews. It's at about 7 out of 10, but I know that a lot of people out there are waiting for Silksong, so if you need to scratch your Metroidvania itch, maybe give this one a try. That's The Mobius Machine. Another game that's already out is The Thaumaturg by Fool's Theory and published by 11-bit. It's out on PlayStation, Xbox, and Steam. It's a story-driven RPG with morally ambiguous choices, and it takes place in the unusual game environment of 20th century Warsaw. This one looks gothic and interesting. The reviews are out, and they are kind of medium. It's coming in between 7 and 8 out of 10. People are saying that it tries to do a lot, and only some of it is successful. But I like the sound of that. It's an ambitious sounding game, so I'd be willing to give this one a try. That's The Thaumaturg. The next one is called Floromancer, Seeds and Spells, made by Joe Sullivan, a solo developer. It's only out on PC, but this is an interesting looking one. There are a lot of gardening games out there, but I'm always here for one that tries something a little bit different. And Floromancer seems to mix together twin stick shooter with interesting gardening mechanics. They say, grow spells. Floromancer is a loop of farming magical plants into spells and then using them to fight for powerful seeds. Every cycle getting closer to saving your forest from deforestation. Also love to see an eco game. It's a really interesting looking one. Floromancer, Seeds and Spells, out on March 5th. And And coming out on March 7th, we have Chasing the Unseen. This one has been getting a little bit of hype. It's by Strange Shift Studio, and it's coming out on Steam. I played the demo of this one in Steam Next Fest, and it is interesting. You climb up giant creatures following a trail of light in a very mysterious world. It has a little bit of the Journey vibe, so if you're into that game, this is a solo developer effort with a very interesting, dreamy-looking environment. If that sounds good to you, you can play it on March the 7th. That's Chasing the Unseen. The next one is a really interesting one to me. I'm a big fan of Moomins. I watched the cartoons and the stop-motion series when I was younger, and we haven't seen many Moomin games, so Snufkin, Memory of Moomin Valley, is an interesting one to me. It was developed by Hyper Games, and it's published by the ever-reliable Raw Fury. It's coming out on PC and Switch. I played a little bit of this one in Steam Next Fest. It's a top-down adventure set in the charming, dreamy, childlike world of the Moomins. In this game, Snufkin the Wanderer returns to Moomin Valley to find that it's been taken over by police, and there are signs everywhere telling him not to camp, not to look, not to start a fire, so he starts tearing down the signs. This is the gameplay. It's a puzzle game where you have to evade police with a little bit of stealth, tear down signs, and then move on to the next area. It has lovely artwork and music. I'm really looking forward to this one. That's Snufkin, Memory of Moomin Valley, out on March 7th. Another very cute indie game that's coming out is Summerhouse by Friedemann. It's published by Future Friend Games, and it's coming out on PC only. You can try a demo of this one on Steam. It's a really good time. It's a Summerhouse builder where you're presented with an empty landscape and lots of pieces of cabins like lampposts, windows, plants, doorways, different kinds of walls and roofs. So you can sculpt your own summer house, and it looks like as you progress in this game, you will unlock different house pieces and move on to different environments. This one is a super chill, relaxing time. I loved the demo. That's Summer House, out on March 8th. The next one is a port of a game that came out on mobile only via Netflix, but is now coming to the consoles. It is High Water by Demagog Studios, makers of Golf Club Wasteland and The Cub. This is an interesting tactics game where you're moving through a flooded world, so it's another eco game. I always love to see that. You build up your party and you go through battles, and there's a really fun mechanic where you go sailing around in a dinghy looking at all of the sunken skyscrapers. It's very vibey, very cool, and you get to listen to a really cool radio show that tells you all about this world as you travel through it. Good atmosphere in this one. That is High Water by Demagog, out on the 14th. Three more to go, and the next one is Unleaving by Orangutan Matter, coming out on the 27th of the month. This one has a really interesting looking art style. It has this gothic, scribbly, hand-drawn style. The developers describe it as a narrative-driven puzzle platformer where each challenge unfolds within a hand-painted landscape, exploring perception and meaning. There is a demo of this one out on Steam. Very interesting looking game. I'm going to give this one a try. That is Unleaving, out on March 27th. And we have a couple of indie big hitters to round out the month. The first is Open Roads, which has been in development for a long time and had a troubled development cycle. But it's being published by Annapurna Interactive, so you'll be hearing a lot about this one, I'm sure. It's coming out on Steam, Switch, Xbox, and PlayStation, including Game Pass, which is always great news. And it's the story of a 16-year-old called Tess Devine, who goes on a road trip with her mother. So it's a story-led game about family and memory and nostalgia. It looks like you'll be sorting through diaries and pictures and trying to piece together some kind of hidden history. Pretty intriguing looking game. I'll definitely be playing this one on Game Pass when it comes out on March 28th. Also out on March 28th is maybe the big indie release of this month, published by Devolver Digital and developed by R.E.C. is coming out on PC and Switch only, and it is Pepper Grinder, an action-packed adventure with a drilling mechanic where you have to fly through the ground using a drill, shoot out, collect things along the way, bop enemies with your drill, and work your way through a bunch of really ingenious levels. The demo of this one was very, very nice. The level design is really cool. The movement feels very fluid, and I was very impressed by how it picks up again if you fall off a level or you make a mistake. It's very easy to get going again, and that's very important in a game that is about momentum. That's Pepper Grinder, out on March 28th. So those are the games that I'm excited about that are coming out this month. One more thing to go in the show, and the final item is a game that I've been fairly obsessed with, and I think a lot of people have, so let's talk about it. It is, of course, the roguelike deck builder, Balatro. So Balatro is a roguelike deck builder by an anonymous developer called Local Thunk, with a soundtrack by Lewis F. It was published by Playstack, it came out on the 20th of February, and it's available on Switch, Steam, Xbox, and PlayStation. On how long to beat, players have registered times of anything from 5 to 121 hours, but what you call finishing this game is up for debate. 5-hour people might have finished a single run, 121-hour people might have unlocked every deck, every card, and every joker. I've played about 50 hours, and I still have a long way to go. It's been a critical smash, Metacritic has it at 90, Screen Rant gave it 9 out of 10, and said that Balatro offers countless hours to engage its treacherous machine of diversion. Polygon also liked it and said it will make you into a card counter in a game where every card counts. Before you know it, you'll be all in. And my summary of this one is that it's a poker-based roguelike deck builder that gets its hooks in quickly, then never lets go. The stacking multiplier system is simple to learn but tricky to master, and as you experiment with different builds, the thrill of seeing a hand burst into flames never gets old. So this is the most fiercely addictive roguelike deck builder I have played since Slay the Spire. I do have 50 hours in it over 2 weeks, which seems insane, but just one more run is never just one more with Balatro. I finished runs with 10 different decks now, but there is still more to unlock. It's showing no signs of letting up on the content. And it is a card game with a lot of systems and rules. It's been a challenge for content creators and reviewers, trying to concisely explain what this game is without getting lost in the weeds. But I'm going to do my best for you, so I hope you'll stick with me for the ride. The basics of this game are that you have to make up poker hands to reach a certain winning score. So you're not playing against another player, you're playing against a blind. That is, a certain amount of chips you have to hit to pass the level. Every time you play a hand, every card adds chips to the pile of your score, equivalent to their number value. So for example, if you play 3 8s, you're going to get 24 chips. But the kind of hand you play adds a multiplier, so your 3 8s are 3 of a kind and they will have given you 24 chips. And a 3 of a kind gives you a times 3 multiplier. That means you're going to score 72 points from your 3 8s. But 72 isn't a great score. The first winning blinds you have to hit are 300, then 450, and then 600. And they are reachable with a couple of decent hands, but you're going to need something better than 3 8s. And there are various tools available to build better hands, the most important of which is discards. You can choose to discard and replace cards you don't want in your hand. So let's say you've got those 3 8s and a handful of rubbish, with a queen being the highest. I would discard everything but the 8s and the queen, and if luck is on my side, maybe I pull a second queen. So now I've got 3 8s and 2 queens, and that's a full house. That gets a better score. The 8s and the queens will score 44 chips, and a full house will add a times 4 multiplier, as it's a more difficult hand to make. So you've got 176 from that hand, and now you're on your way to hitting that first target of 300. So that's how the hands work, but there's a metagame here too. You have 4 hands to hit each blind. If you fail, it's game over. If you win, you get some prize money and move on to the next one. To win a complete run, you have to ascend through 8 different levels. Each one has 2 games and then a boss. Bosses have an extra challenge, like all your cards being pulled face down, or a very, very high blind to hit, or something even more brutal, like only being able to play one hand to hit a high blind. So you need to find some more ways to start scoring heavily and quickly, and that is where things get interesting. The word Balatro means jester, and that's because jokers are all important in this game. Jokers are wild cards that will do something to your hand. For example, a simple joker might add plus 4 to your multiplier, which will really help you in early levels. It might give you bonus chips for every even-numbered card you play. It might give you extra chips or multiplier from playing face cards like jacks, queens, and kings, or aces. And it might let you skip a number if you're playing a straight, which is very, very handy if you're running a straight build. You buy jokers using your winnings, they're always random, and stacking jokers on jokers on jokers will lead to a build. There are 150 jokers in this game, and they all interact in different ways. So there's a lot to discover, there's room for creativity, there's room for paying attention and learning the game, putting jokers together in unexpected ways, and before long you'll be hitting huge scores with your jokers and your build. My record for one hand is currently 169,000, which is very good to me, but YouTube is full of people who've cracked the system, and they're scoring in the millions with a winning build. So the possibilities are endless here. It took me about 5 hours to get my first win. You get an unassuming little victory window, but every victory unlocks more stuff, like new jokers to try, new decks with different boons and handicaps, like a black deck where you have less hands to win, a nebula deck with reduced slots for buffs, and a checkered deck which only has two suits. So there's always something new to try, and the game keeps ramping up the challenges and keeps you on the hook, seemingly indefinitely. And there are other layers to the game as well. You can buy booster packs in the shop, planet cards that will power up individual hands so you can get a more powerful pair or a more powerful flush with more multiplier. Tarot cards will buff individual cards so you can maybe get a gold stamp on your king or a blue stamp on an ace that will make it do something special. And there are spectre cards that do all kinds of weird things too. So every deck you build is different and there's always something new to discover. And I think that's why Balatro works the way it does. It has a huge amount of variety, built on an easy-to-understand foundation. The jokers are many and have diverse effects that interlock with each other in clever, unexpected ways. A few of my favourites are a joker that makes all your cards be recognised as a face card, that is a jack, queen or king. I didn't see the benefit of it at first, but when I paired it with another joker that made every face card add to the multiplier, suddenly every card in my deck was mega powerful. I felt like I'd made a real discovery, and I got a winning run with that formula. There's also a joker that eats other jokers, getting more powerful every time it does, so you have to play for cash to constantly be feeding it more jokers. There is a vampire joker that will consume those gold and blue and purple stamps and status effects from your cards and get stronger every time. There is a hiker joker that makes every card you play get slightly more powerful, so if you get it at the start of a run, it can get you a long way. And all of this adds up to a real winning formula. The joker combinations seem endless. It's very, very addictive. Every run feels different. You don't know what will become your most powerful hand on any given run. It might be a flush run, or you might end up winning by playing single cards, or feeding jokers to another all-consuming joker. So within this formula is a seemingly endless amount of variety. And I think that's born out of some real ingenuity in the design here. So chapeau and well done to Local Thunk. You did it. You cracked the system. This is a deck builder that belongs with the greats. It's sold 500,000 copies since it launched, and that number is only going to multiply from here. That's Balatro. So I hope you enjoyed that show. It was a bit of a mixed one this week. There were those reviews at the start, Final Fantasy Remake and so forth. We got onto the March indie releases, and then we had the Balatro review. This was actually a pretty weird one for me, because normally I sit down and record the show all in one go. But this time, I recorded that indie preview sometime last week. I recorded the Balatro review like a week ago, so I was patching together audio from different times, which felt very strange, and just dropping in to give little links telling you what was next and stuff. Let me know if this worked for you, or if it felt a little confusing or pieced together, or if the illusion of it just being a normal show was working. I would be curious to hear from you, and it will help me decide how to combine this newfound interest in YouTube videos with the podcast, which I of course love doing. But if you are interested in those videos, please do come and follow the channel on YouTube. It is Gaming in the Wild, and comments, likes, subs, they are all very much appreciated. As are my patrons. Big thank you to all of my patrons. A lot of people in the Discord have been really, really supportive and kind with my layoff news. So thanks very much to them. You're welcome to come and join them. It's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. And that's it for this week. So I'll be back next week with a new show for you. Take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.